The Prime Minister's Chief of Staff, Andrew Curtin, previously headed up the New Zealand arm of a lobbying firm which worked for alcohol companies which pushed back against a proposed container return scheme. Mr. Curtin resigned from that role on the 31st of January, one day before taking up the job as Chris Hipkins' Chief of Staff. Just last week, 6 weeks after Mr. Curtin started in the Prime Minister's office, the government scrapped the container return scheme. This information comes as part of a series by RNZ investigative reporter Guyon Espiner, delving into the world of government lobbying. We'll speak to Guyon shortly, but first we're joined by the Prime Minister, Chris Hipkins. Morena.
Good morning.
This sequence of events looks a bit sus, doesn't it?
I think it's important to note that the container return scheme had already been offered up for reprioritisation by David Parker, the minister responsible before Andrew Curtin had even started working in the Beehive.
Just can I stop you there? Offered up for reprioritisation? I'm writing that down. You mean axed?
No, because we haven't axed it. We've delayed it. So we're still going to go ahead with the container return scheme at some point, but we're not.
But you had already decided to reprioritise it before Andrew Curtin arrived in your office.
That is correct. Yes.
And is there any problem with Andrew Curtin's previous lobbying for the alcohol companies, and now in your office, where there are many important issues with regard to alcohol advertising and so on at hand?
Actually, Kim, I just want to make sure that my last answer is not misinterpreted. In terms of the decision around the reprioritisation, that obviously went through Cabinet more recently, but it was on the list for reprioritisation before Andrew Curtin started working for me. In terms of the broader issues around lobbyists and, you know, any movement between people who have done lobbying and the Beehive, I think it's really important that people are very clear if they are shifting between roles, that they dispense of any ongoing commitments or obligations or previous work before they take up any role. I'm absolutely certain that Andrew Curtin has done that. So he's not, you know, part of his taking on the job was that he had to dispense of any remaining kind of commitments he had to any of the clients that he had worked with previously, and I'm confident that he's done that.
Is there any coincidence that, as Guyon Espiner will report, big lobbying companies have on their staff former prime ministerial chiefs of staff, a press secretary working for liquor interests? We call it a revolving door. That's exactly what it is, isn't it?
I think they're employing people who understand how the systems of government work. I think it would be fair to say that for many people outside of the political bubble, the way government works can be a bit of a mystery. And so by bringing people into the process who have worked in those roles before, they feel that they are better able to, you know, to input into the decision-making process. That's obviously a decision for them.
Input into the decision-making process.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. You said yesterday that lobbyists were no big deal. They're not really doing anything anyone can do.
Well, as I've said, if you look at the points where they are making an input, it's often about how to be effective in doing things that anyone can do. Anyone can make a submission to a select committee.
Well, that's money for old rope then, isn't it?
Well, look, how people choose to spend their money is ultimately a decision for them. If they want to spend money on those things, then they can do that. But things like, you know, the ability to make submissions to select committees, which is often something where lobbyists seem to be involved, actually anyone can do that.
It's not making submissions to select committees, though, is it? It's organising gatherings. It's organising, you know, drinks at pubs. It's much more. Certainly anybody can make a submission to the select committee. That's not what they're doing in the main, is it? They are using their relationships that they have developed on one side or the other or both.
Yeah, and I think that there is a need for transparency and for vigilance around those.
How are you going to get transparency then?
Well, this is one of the challenges that I think Parliament has grappled with before. I'm not saying that we've got it completely right now, but we looked at a bill, for example, earlier on under the Key government that would have had more transparency around lobbying. One of the difficulties there is how you actually draw the distinction between people's lobbying and people's regular day-to-day employment.
Have you ever done anything about transparency and lobbying?
Well, as I've indicated, Kim, it has been canvassed before.
But yeah, I'm not talking about canvassing. I'm talking about doing.
Well, it's one of the challenges there is it's not as straightforward.
So
as
you have done nothing about making lobbying more transparent, is what you're saying.
Well, yes. I mean, if you look, we've released ministerial diaries so that people can see who ministers are meeting with. And that certainly is one of the reasons why we get more questions about this, because it makes it clear who ministers are meeting with and when.
And yet we unusually do not have regulations around the lobbying industry, for example, stand-down periods for those who've worked in government. You've said, no, you're not really interested in doing that.
People are entitled to earn a living once they leave from politics.
Nobody's stopping them earning a living.
Well, if that's the area where they want to earn a living, then, you know, that's their choice. I wouldn't completely rule out doing some more in this space in the future. That hasn't been a high priority for me, but I wouldn't rule it out.
I wouldn't completely rule out doing something in this space in the future. It doesn't sound like anything is going to happen on that front. So how are you going to make lobbying more transparent?
Well, as I've indicated, you know, I think one of the things that we've already done is release ministerial diaries so that where ministers are meeting with lobbyists, people can see that. Where ministers are going to events where that have been organised by lobbyists, people can see that. I think that transparency is one of the best things that we can do in this area.
Where can people see it?
It's on the Beehive website. Ministers' diaries are published every month on the Beehive website, so people can see what ministers are doing and who they're meeting with.
Congratulations, you have a new police minister, Jenny Anderson. Quick question. If you didn't know what she had done for the police, what made you think she would be a good minister, and how carefully could you have thought before making that decision if you had no idea about her role with the police?
I don't think that's a fair characterisation of my comment. I was well aware that Jenny Anderson had worked for 10 years at police.
You had no idea what she did for those 10 years?
No, and I knew that she worked in a policy role, a civilian role. What I didn't know is the detailed list of every project that she'd worked on.
I don't think anybody was asking for a detailed list. People asked you what she'd done for the police, and you declared no knowledge at all.
No, that's not correct, Kim. I said she'd worked in the Police National Headquarters in a policy role, a civilian role, but I didn't have a list of the projects that she had worked on. I'm happy to share that, but the list has now been provided publicly. It includes issues around organised crime.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no, thank you for sharing. It's just that your declaration of ignorance about what she was doing on that stand-up when you announced that she would be the new police minister sounded unusually vague.
I don't agree with that characterisation.
Thank you for your time, Chris Hipkins.